Welcome to the Coaches Spotlight Podcast, the show where you'll be listening to coaches from around the globe that share their pitfalls and struggles all the way up to what made them successful in their field. Ready to catapult your coaching business past the competition? Then grab your favorite beverage and get ready to listen to meaningful conversations and learn from industry experts. Here's your host, Oliver Mameni.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Coaches Spotlight. Our next guest is an author and award-winning VIP life coach that specializes in permanent weight loss. His expertise in this area comes from over 25 years of experience practicing in the fields of exercise, physiology, and nutrition. For nearly a decade, he has coached VIPs both nationally and internationally on successful weight management. He has earned international recognition and several awards, including Best London Life Coach in 2018, Best UK Life Coach in 2019, and Best International Life Coach in 2020. Please welcome Darren Christopher Rowland.
Great to be here, Mameni.
Now, we always start off the show with getting an insight from our guests with what they're specialized in and what is the outcome they guide people towards. In other words, what is your signature coaching program, Darren?
It's weight loss / weight management. So I basically have a program that empowers people to shift from where they currently are in this context, which is obviously to lose weight. But as most people know, most weight loss is temporary, meaning, you know, you go around in a circle, you put out tons of effort, you lose weight, and for some reason, you put the weight back on. Now, it's obviously a very short version of a longer story, but it's what people do over and over and over, and they literally just get stuck into a merry-go-round. So basically, my program's speciality is helping people to break through and break free from that situation, meaning how to, step one, lose weight just like they normally do. However, to actually maintain the weight loss so it lasts through time or permanently, literally, or forever. So the way they eat, the way they move, the way they think in their head is all compatible and basically creates that result. So they have longevity. There's a permanence going on in their physical change. So in other words, they don't go around in a circle, wasting their effort, getting emotionally frustrated. And it's literally how to free themselves from that situation.
So if you want to find out more about Darren's program, then head on over to DarrenChristopherRowland.com. Now, before we move on, for those of you that are a coach or a consultant, or you want to become one and have not created your signature program yet, then you're leaving a ton of money on the table. But no worries, I got you covered. My team and I have put together a guide that teaches exactly how to design your signature program. The exercises throughout the guide will systematically help you in creating a successful program all the way up to how much to charge for it. So if you want to grab a free copy of this guide, then head on over to coachesspotlight.com/guide. That's coachesspotlight.com/guide. So Darren, tell us, what differentiates you from other coaches in your industry that guide people to the same outcome that you lead them to?
I think the situation is that a lot of coaches work from a certain perspective, which is fantastic, which is obviously to go out and help the clients and they do what they need to do and they fulfill that intent. I think the difference between me and how I work is that my coaching comes not from an academic qualification, but more so from the pain of my life, of the early days in my career, which is I used to be a personal trainer and I used to do a very good job, and I used to do that for about 5 years at that time. And I started to notice that I had some challenges with some clients, which is they'd produce the results they wanted. They'd lose weight, for example. And unfortunately, you know, I'd see a small number of these clients later on in a situation where they put back on some of their weight. Now, other personal trainers around me at the time, it didn't bother them because it was just a source of income. But for me personally, it really got under my skin. It wasn't every case, but it was a few. And eventually I just sat down one day and wanted to figure out why that was happening, because clearly they had made a shift. They paid some money. They'd gone through all the effort and exertion and produced a great result, but then something must have happened and they've gone back. And so I kind of discovered that, you know, it's a psychological element here. We're not talking about a physiological block. We're talking about psychological reasons why that happens, whatever it is. And I decided that really what I needed to do was understand the psychological side to complement the physiological side that I already knew based on my education and my qualifications. And so that was the ethos of me life coaching back in 2001. And I started doing that alongside, at that time, my personal training. And basically, I really kind of amalgamated them together. And by around 2005, I'd started a new company, which was called Easy Health. And the tagline was Health Made Easy. So simply how to take this very complex area of health and actually simplify it so that it actually become much more easy for someone to understand. And due to the success of that, I opened up a new company called Easy Weight Management in 2007. Again, the whole ethos was how to show people that losing weight was not a complex or a difficult situation. It's something really easy to do as long as obviously you had guidance and professional help and support and you took the right actions, thought the right thoughts and made the right decisions, then you could produce weight loss easily and correctly. And that's exactly what we did. And it actually springboarded into a club back in 2008 in an area called St. Albans in Hertfordshire. And we basically had around 500 women come to the club over the 2.5 years that we were there. And we basically helped them. We empowered them to basically be in a position where they could lose the weight, did lose the weight, and then sustain the weight loss through time. And I should emphasize, this is without dieting. This is through changing eating in a healthy, methodical way where you don't have to look at your calories. You don't have to cut back on them. You don't have to be overly concerned what's going on. I'm not portraying that the message is you can eat whatever you want. You obviously have to make changes and be diligent about it, but you don't literally have to be on a technical diet, which by definition is a calorie controlled situation or a calorie reduced intake. You can eat more calories and still lose weight. And just to emphasize that point, a lot of people use a diet as a template or a springboard to losing weight, and it does work. It really, really does work because you eat less, your body has to make up the calories. So after a few days or a week or two, you will be lighter. But the only challenge with it in terms of a long process is that you can't really implement that as a strategic pattern into your real life, meaning days, weeks, months, and years on decades of your life, because it just can't be sustained. So most people hit that merry-go-round that I talked about earlier, which is they lose weight, no problem, but they just put the weight back on. And so they run that pattern over and over and over. So the skill set is basically keeping the calories the same, more or less, but instead raising your metabolism through exercise, through doing activity, which you love to do, which I also want to emphasize is not something you have to do. It's not going to the gym if you hate it, because most people don't like to go to the gym or they don't like doing exercise even because they haven't found something that they're passionate about, something they really love to do. And if you can find an activity that you thoroughly and genuinely enjoy, you will do it consistently. Fact. So what the challenge is not so much exercise, it's finding the right type of activity that fits your budget, fits the weather, fits accessibility for you, depending on who you are, where you live, etc. But therefore being able to do something consistently. Now, some people, that's dancing. You know, we forget that dancing is a form of activity slash exercise. So, you know, a lot of people, a lot of ladies especially, used to dance when they were in their teens or their early 20s, when they were young, let's say, and single. And fast forward 20, 30 years, you know, they've had a family, they've got settled down. And so they've stopped doing the things they used to do. And now they try and get themselves to the gym, which is okay. If it works, it's great. But for most people, they just struggle with it because it doesn't float their boat. It's not a passion for them. So just using this simple example, if the same person could actually go back and do dancing again, the kind of thing she loved to do, the thing that she felt passionate about. In fact, it wasn't even exercise, was it? For her at the time, it was fun. It was partying. It was a purely pleasurable experience. So it's replicating that. Now, for some people, it's swimming. For some people, it's jogging. For some other people, it's going to the gym, if that's the case for them. But it's about finding what you love to do. And if you find that thing, then you're going to be consistent in it. And if you're consistently doing something you love to do, it's no effort. As a result, your metabolism will go up. If your metabolism goes up, then you're going to burn more calories even if you don't lower your calories, which is the first step we were talking about. So there's no need to change your lifestyle by going on a strict regime that doesn't fit the ethos of a normal life. Because invariably, you have to go to work, you have to go to a party, you have to go out of your normal routine. And so, you know, being on a fixed diet is not just something people don't enjoy, it doesn't fit a daily routine, day to day overall, or at least in terms of a long term. So piecing these two together, the program is about helping people to understand that there is a way to make change happen and for it to last through time. And the way that happens, it starts with the most important element, which is the mindset. Nutrition and the training, these are just actions that come from a decision, which is a psychological element or the parameter. And so it's understanding how you think, how you feel, basically your beliefs, your values, your identity, the rules you use, etc. And all of these come from the references of your life. So all of this was amalgamated into the club that I was talking about in St. Albans in 2008. And we had, as I said, 500 people come over 2.5 years. And I basically left the club in December 2010. And I went into the public arena as a private consultant in, at that time, weight management. And I did really well there. And I held seminars and webinars, etc. And I got to the point where I was getting in contact, fortunately, with some VIP clientele. And they started to come along. And that just kind of grew from there. And then from 2012... I started doing VIP clientele in the context of, again, weight loss slash weight management. And that's basically what I've been doing ever since until today, which is what I do as a main profession. And so the basic ethos here is that, you know, change is possible. Whether you want to make more money, whether you want to be thinner, whether you want to feel happier, whether you want to have a better relationship, or whatever the context may be that you're having, that you're thinking about in your life. But the change will only happen if the psychological aspect is there. If there's a temporary change, then most people feel very dissatisfied with that and just go round and round and round. And so the way to break out of that is to realize that change is possible, and it does take a certain mindset, a certain psychological discipline. And in coaching people, it's delivered that these kind of changes are based on your beliefs. So if your beliefs can be changed, if you can work on this level, which is your unconsciousness, then they can filter through and you'll find that you can make better decisions, take better actions. And again, you get the changes you're looking for and they sustain in your life or they're more consistent. I think one of the most powerful challenges people have is making a shift, making a change, and it simply doesn't fit with their lifestyle, the style in which they choose to live their life. That lifestyle has to be compatible with any new decisions and new feelings and thus new behaviors, because if not, there's going to be a conflict. And most people struggle because they hit the brick wall, which is in essence a conflict. You know, you want to be thinner, so you eat less, but then you hit the wall because your metabolism slows down and then you stop losing weight. So as a strategy, what do you do? Continue doing what you're doing? Well, that would mean eating even less, but you can't. So brick walls turn up in that context, or finances or emotions or career. And it's about breaking them down by understanding that changes need to take place and they need to be compatible with how you're thinking, like a local level, your beliefs, your decisions. If you can manage to do all of that, then you're going to get change that happens in your life and it's going to be lasting. There's going to be longevity there. And I think everyone's looking for that in their life.
Now, everything starts with mindset, no doubt about it. But unfortunately, too many people on the planet have not wrapped their head around that yet. However, you perfectly laid out for us what we need to do with giving us a blueprint. But now, it's all about doing it. What I see the challenge being is finding that activity that the individual enjoys. Now, you mentioned that the ladies enjoyed dancing when they were younger. Sure, but how do we get the men to join them? Because I'm sure they're also out of shape. And now, to get those gentlemen off the couch and go dancing with their wife or girlfriend is not going to be easy. So the question is, how do we get him to join her? And it does not necessarily need to be dancing, but any activity.
Just assuming I used to go to the gym, which is standard procedure, or I used to go jogging. And again, fast forward 10, 20 years, and he's now in his 30s or 40s or 50s, and he feels stuck. He's not stuck, but he feels he is stuck. He feels overwhelmed. Overloaded, he's out of shape, and he just thinks, you know, what's the point, or what can I do, or it's too hard, or I don't know what to do, and he's in that place. Okay, simply, he's in a position where he can do one of two things. he can go out and reinvent the wheel. He can go and join something and start from scratch, so to speak, and just try, which is an option, and it can work. Obviously, though, there's no guarantee here. Now, the other option, just in this little sample, is that he goes back and he does what he used to do when he was younger and he was better in shape. I know that he was younger. His metabolism was different. He may not have had the same commitments back then. So I understand the argument that there's a lot of variables, and I do understand that. But even if he replicates, which is basically modeling himself, modeling his past of what he actually did, then that's going to go a long, long way to produce some momentum. And I think what people need is what you were asking. They need a kick up the backside, basically, lovingly. They need a something to get rolling, something that's going to kickstart them, get them going. And, you know, the best way is literally to do something that you used to do that you know used to work, because it's almost a guarantee. And making that start, it really is the hardest thing. I mean, if we look at change as a whole, every action you ever take, and we put it into a scale from 0 to 10, and you think about which one of those ones, 1 through 10, is actually the hardest one. I mean, is it 9, as in from 9 to 10, or is it from 7 to 9 or 5? Then the answer actually is it's going to be at 0 to 1. When you're literally doing nothing and you're literally starting off, that's the hardest part. The momentum in the beginning, mathematically, it's exactly the same as 9 to 10 or 7 to 8 or 3 to 4. Going from 0 to 1 is the same math, but psychologically it feels harder. And so just getting some momentum going, something that gives you a kickstart, is really useful. And again, to emulate yourself, to copy the success you know you had once, is an easier path than starting afresh, something completely new, trying to reinvent the wheel, trying to make things happen. And I think that's a really good indicator to go from there. The other thing I want to mention is, you know, most people in terms of their psychological aspect, as with everyone, me including you, yourself, we all have two minds. We have the unconscious and we have the conscious, but there's different parts of the unconscious. And one key area is a lot of people move away from pain, and other people, you know, they move towards pleasure. So some people are going to be inspired by thinking about what they're going to get or could have. And for them, obviously, they're going to be thinking, okay, if I could get myself into shape, then I'm going to feel phenomenal. I'm going to feel happy. I'm going to feel sexy. I'm going to feel in control. I'm going to look good. I'm going to be decisive. And it's a pleasure. So that will pull them out of their rut and get them to start taking even a single action, maybe putting on their trainers and just going out for a jog or a fast walk and just picking up some pace and some momentum. While they're doing that, they can think, okay, what can I do next? What's next on the agenda? What's a single step I can take next to build this momentum? The other type of person is just the opposite. They will look at things from a pain point of view, and it's neither right nor wrong. It's just how people are structured. So these people will say, okay, I'm overweight. I feel slobberish. I feel tired. I feel lethargic. I feel stressed. I don't look too good, blah, blah, blah. And this will be their motive. They won't be moving towards so much. They'll be moving away from the pain that they feel. So they'll still go out and maybe take the same action in this example, maybe take a run or go join the gym, but they'll do it because the motive for them is it's more pain than they can handle. And pain is a very, very strong motivator. And another way of saying this is it's dissatisfaction or being dissatisfied with something is something a lot of people hide out from. They don't want to get on the scales, for example, because, you know, they don't want to feel bad. And you can understand the logic of that. There's no argument there. The only challenge is the very pain, or the very motive, I should say, that people are looking for to go get themselves to have this momentum that I'm talking about. That pain's there. It's just we don't pay attention to it. So if you had the guts to do it, you'd get on the scales, you'd look at your body weight, and if you weren't too jazzed by it, you know, instead of looking at it and going, oh, bad this and bad that, instead of looking and go, okay, this obviously isn't what I want to see, but, you know, I'm being honest with myself and I'm being in touch with myself. Now I can feel satisfied, and now that pain that can motivate me to go do the very thing that actually tomorrow I try anyway to get myself motivated to do but can't find. So the pain is there in people's lives. I'm not trying to paint the picture that we need to go around feeling bad all the time. I'm just saying the pain that we hide out from is the very thing that we can use to our advantage by just, you know, getting in touch and being real and not suppressing things and denying things and just pretending things aren't there. So motive comes from pain or it comes from pleasure. And if you can find that trigger, if you can make a start, if you can just get some momentum going, that's 0 to 1. And you'll find that 1 to 2 falls into place. then a bit more effort, and you're at 2 to 3. So, you know, after a while, you start to pick up, and it then carries itself. In summary, I think it's a very good adage. Someone once said that, you know, in the beginning, you have to put 10 out, 10 of anything, 10%, 10 money, 10 effort, whatever, but 10 out, and you get 1 in return. It's a very unfair situation, but that's how life is rigged. Eventually, you get to a point where you're now only putting 1 out, but you're getting 10 in return. It kind of reverses on itself. And I think that's fair for any context of life, and weight loss and weight management and feeling healthy and being in shape is no different. It may be a little bit more effort in the beginning, but you hit a critical mass, a threshold, and bam, you start moving forwards, and now it becomes effortless because the passion takes over. You see the results. And I think that's really what it comes down to.
Bottom line is having fun. And once we do, it becomes easier to overcome your fear. Wait, scratch that. Not overcome it, but learn how to dance with it, right?
Absolutely. If you try to literally attack your fear or deny your fear or confront the fear head on, you may face a challenge. But if you literally hold the hands of the fear of the dance and dance with it.
Yes.
You'll soon find that it just loses its power. And again, I'm not trying to downplay fear because fear is useful in the appropriate context.
Sure.
But in day-to-day life, you know, you and I and everyone listening, we link pain to things we don't need to have pain linked to. And so we fear it. And remember, fear is an acronym. It's not a real word in the sense because it stands for fear, basically stands for false evidence that appears real. And so many times that, you know, we imagine this thing blocking us or stopping us or holding us back is real. And of course, it is real in our mind. It's not that, you know, we're doolally or anything like that. It is actually in our mind. But that's the point. It doesn't usually exist in the real world. It's a block that we've put there, allowed to have be put there, and we don't address it. So, you know, realizing that it's just something that doesn't really exist and just taking action piece by piece to segment it and break it down really will help you. And you don't want to live by fear. I've never met anyone who's lived by fear and had a happy life.
Nope. Couldn't imagine that being fun either. Which leads me to ask you, Darren, to share with us a success quote or mantra and an example of how you've applied its meaning in your life.
Okay. I like the question. I think one of the best ones I ever heard was the following. It said, when you're green, you grow. And when you ripen, you rot. Which is an analogy for basically understanding that, you know, in life, in any context, your life as a whole, you have to continue to look for the next level. You have to continue to expand and learn and achieve and grow. You don't have to be so goal-oriented. You're always trying to accomplish something. That's not the case. But, you know, a lot of people get stuck in a rut or a groove, and it's not far from the grave, so to speak, because people get comfortable, and that's basically death rattle. And the way out of it, the way not to ripen and therefore rot, is basically to continually looking for the newness in your life, always learning, always expanding, always achieving, growing, accomplishing, or that kind of ethos. And that was really a really useful quote that pulled me out a lot of times in my early days.
Oh yeah, I like that quote. I believe it's a quote by Ray Kroc. Darren, share with us, what was the main reason why you started your coaching business?
So back in the year 2000, I started coaching because as a personal trainer at the time, I was producing really good results. I say humbly, but I was. Mm-hmm. I was producing results with people in fitness, in weight loss, in health. That was my job. But a percentage I would see, basically, let's just say put the weight back on, or their health wouldn't sustain, or their fitness, you know, they'd get in shape for a marathon or a triathlon. It'd be great. And they'd be tip-top condition. You see them a month after the event and they look just like someone completely different. So the point is, it just pained me. It bothered me. It didn't bother the people around me. I don't know why, but that's just, you know, I can't speak for them. But for me, it really irritated me that, you know, the few people that would like this, why was that happening? Because I think I just wanted to be in a position where I could help everyone. I mean, that's how everyone, I think, thinks. So I really started coaching because I saw it as the next level for me to be able to understand the psychological side of an individual to complement the physiological side of the education I had and to bring those two together to tally them up. And, you know, for the next period of my life, for the next 5 years, I have to be honest, I was producing some phenomenal results because, for example, in the context of weight loss, people were just, you know, able to sustain their successes basically over time. And obviously see it was fulfilling for me, but more importantly for the individual, they got their own fulfillment and they were able to, without a change their lifestyle, get in shape and keep the shape basically for as long as they were applying the principles. And so that's really how my coaching began. It wasn't a master plan, wasn't a university education, wasn't anything like that. As usual, life takes over. Life gave me a punch at that time. That's how I saw it, because I didn't want to go down that negative route of, you know, just seeing people go back every time and earn an income and just making it a job. That's never been my ethos. And so I couldn't go there. So I had to figure it out. But that pain, as usual, like for most people's lives, it drove me to actually be in a position where I had to expand myself. Like I was saying before, you know, if you're green, you grow, you ripen, you rot. So I grew and it really helped me. And here we are today.
Was there anything holding you back from becoming a coach?
I wouldn't say per se holding me back, but I think another way of looking at it is I never thought I needed to basically be a coach. It was never part of the plan. I never even considered it. It wasn't something I doubted. It was just never part of my thought process. It never turned up. So, you know, like again, like I'm keep saying, like life is like that. If something hadn't have happened, then I would have, you know, maybe gone down just an angle or an aisle where I've just been a personal trainer for a long, long time and my life wouldn't have grown. So on one hand, it didn't hold me back. But on the other hand, it was a limitation at the time, if you follow the logic, because by not evaluating about becoming a coach, you know, you could look at it as I wasted those 5 years as a PT. I don't believe I did, but, you know, looking at it argumentatively, there's different ways of looking at it. So failure to think about it that way could have held me back longer if I hadn't taken action, I think.
You know, I always say no education, job, or doing something that we didn't really enjoy was a waste of time, as everything somehow brought us to where we are today. Now, if you're not happy where you are at the moment, then you need to work at getting to where you want to be. Fact of the matter is, we're all responsible for how our life looks like, which falls back to the decisions we made in the past. Darren, looking back, would you have done anything differently before you began your career as a coach?
Yes, I would have literally started the career as a coach a lot earlier than being in a pain situation where I'm having to do it. I would have literally started it a lot earlier in my career and complemented the personal training. And I think I would have been able to reach a lot more people than I already have, which is a lot of people, but I think I would have, you know, been 5 years ahead of myself and 5 years ahead of the situation. And I could have just, you know, delivered more value to people and reached out to a lot more. And I think that would have been something I would have done if I can go back in time.
I have actually thought about time machines a lot and if it would be a good or bad thing to have, but that's somehow a different podcast. Maybe Joe Rogan should reinvite Neil deGrasse Tyson and talk about that one. Would probably be very interesting to listen to. Darren, let's talk about failure. I would like that you share with us a story where you've experienced failure and also share with us the lessons you have learned from it.
So I've had a few failures in many experiences. So I think one of the earliest ones was, I mean, I started training at home with weights when I was 11. I was a little boy of 11.
Cool.
And for, 7 years, I literally trained in my bedroom, didn't have any money, didn't, you know, have access to any resources, maybe the occasional hard copy magazine as it was in those days. This was the mid 80s, you know, the internet wasn't around. And I would literally bust the gut every evening after school. I would train 2 hours in my bedroom. We eventually bought a bench and I had to basically give up my bed in order to have the bench in the bedroom. It was a choice between having two single beds, me and my brother, or having no bench, or having the bench and putting him into bunk beds. So as a boy, you know, I had a bunk bed, which wasn't the cool thing to do, but that was the choice I made. And I was you know, committing myself basically. And I would train every evening, hours on end. And I would do that for months on months, years after years. And I didn't grow. Cut a long story short, I have what's called an ectomorphic body frame. Uh-huh. My father's physique. So therefore I'm very skinny by nature, very thin. And so building any kind of weight is almost an impossibility. And I went through 7 years of just being stuck basically and feeling like a total failure. Frustrated, overwhelmed, overloaded, semi-depressed. I mean, I was in a really sugary place and it wasn't very good. It's funny you mentioned that actually before, one of your comments before, Mameni, because, you know, I think that was the very early days of the pain that was building up in me without me being consciously aware of it, a sense of dissatisfaction that, you know, things were unfair. And so I think, you know, fast forward time, being a PT and seeing people in a position where they pay hard-earned money, put out all the effort, and they really genuinely by the heart want to make a change. Only example in terms of weight loss to, you know, be 2 months down the line and just put all that weight back on and start all over again. I mean, it's heartbreaking. It really is to see people struggle. And I think it just reminds me of my own pain. I think in saying this out loud, that's what it is. And that's where the pain was that irritated me, not to say what it doesn't matter. It's only 3 or 5 people out of 100, but you know, this is not good enough. I mean, these people, every person counts. And I think that was the pain that started me and led me all the way to the pain of becoming a coach in 2000. A second pain, also a failure, I should say, is when I eventually left school and I went into the health career. And again, please bear in mind, this is 1989. I wanted to go into the health industry. And so I purchased a course online to do, and I used up all the money I had, which was, I had none. I had to physically go out and get a full-time job and borrow some money from someone just to pay for the course. And the course was an home delivery course, basically. It was a home study course, I should say. And again, it's supposed to be about 6 months. And I got some of my books for about 3 months. And then they just stopped coming. And you can imagine, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. I eventually found a registered office in London, went down there, but that was just a registered office. In other words, they weren't the people doing the home course, so they couldn't help. And for about 2 months, I was a totally lost place because I'd spent every penny I didn't even have. I'd even borrowed it. I left school with no qualifications, none whatsoever, literally. And I'd exhausted my only possibility, I believed. And I was just in a lost place. Rather than drag out the story, I was in that kind of, I'm totally failed here. And life again steps in at just the right time. And just when I'm about to call quits, I get something through the post, and it's a backlog of 3 months of study work on top of the 2 months coming up. And of course, you know, I'm bedazzled and I'm over the moon. I'm jazzed, and just shows you that the pain always turns up at a certain point, and you feel like you failed. You feel like you've done the wrong thing and made the mistake, and you just want to beat yourself up. But that's not what failure is about. If you feel it, failure is a message that says, okay, something didn't work here. Doesn't mean something won't work over there or next.
Exactly.
You've got to literally pull yourself up. I think most people want to go through life imagining they've got a bulletproof vest on and never get shot. And it'd be nice to think like that, but it doesn't work. You have to get shot. In fact, even if you don't have to, you will. And so you will go down. And maybe sometimes you just hit the floor and get bruised and you get back up. Sometimes, quite honestly, you are hospitalized. You'll be in a coma, metaphorically.
Yep.
But whatever happens, you've got to be in a position where that failure doesn't hold you down. So it's not about failing per se. It's about how you deal with the situation that you deem to be a failure, how you cope with it. Now, back then, I coped with it very bad because I didn't know a lot about psychology at all. Didn't know about me, myself. And so I dealt with it in a bad way. And thankfully, as I mentioned, after 3 months, the books came through and I was saved. And I think that was an early nudge by the powers that be, so to speak, above, that said, you know, pay attention because you've got more coming. This is just a little nudge. And so now, you know, if I could just quickly share with the listeners, you know, if you do get into a situation where you screw up or you fudge up or you make a mistake or you make an error or you do something like that, don't feel terrible. If you want to feel bad, but don't stay there. Don't stay there for hours and hours and days, which is what most people do. They just beat themselves up, which is not only wrong, it's just you don't deserve that, right? You deserve to be much happier than that. So if there's something that didn't go right, learn your lesson. What didn't happen here that should have? What could I learn? How can I make it better? What didn't I do I should have done? What's something I can do that will make sure I'm never back here again? And just think about that and get yourself out of the pain, so to speak, the rotting apple. And get back to the green growing and just think, okay, what do I need to do now? How can I get back on track? Or how can I do this a better way? And so just remember, failure isn't a real thing. It's just a perception.
I'm a very strong believer that everything happens for a reason, specifically when it comes to failure. I know it might sound a bit harsh what I'm going to say now, but I think everybody should experience adversity. The more, the better. Why? Because it's then when our true character shows up. Not only that, but it prepares us for other unpleasant times that we will face. If I look back when I started online, I had absolutely no idea how this internet thingamajig worked, and even less what internet marketing actually was. And I can't tell you how many times I failed and felt defeated, but I knew there was a way. I just needed to find my way. And after trial and error on many levels, I took all that experience and opened a marketing agency. But I could only do that because I saw what did and did not work. And through seeing all that, I knew I had the knowledge not only to deliver results for ourselves, but also for our clients.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, someone once said, and I think it's very accurate, that success is the result of good judgment.
Yes.
And good judgment itself is the result of experience.
Correct.
And experience itself is usually a result of failure or bad judgment.
Ooh, I love that. Darren, let's shift gears. Share with us a story when you had an aha moment. Take us back to that very moment in time and talk about the steps you took to turn that aha moment into success.
Okay, I had a client a good 6 years ago now, and she was in a position where she wanted to, she was basically going through a bad time with her husband, and we're looking at divorce, and we're complimenting whether they should do it, you know, contemplating the situation. And we were just doing our normal coaching session, and we were talking through, and she really, we were talking and she made a comment basically that really just surprised me. And I didn't understand what it was at the time. And later on I figured out what it was, and it's quite awe inspiring. And she was saying, look, you know, and again, it may seem to other people common sense or common knowledge, but to me back then it was just, you know, something rang a bell in my mind. So basically she was conveying that, you know, she wants to leave. She wants to be happier. She wants to be free. She wants to find what she believes to be as a new guy and be happy. Blah, blah, blah. The challenge is the fear stopped her. So while the status quo was painful, she'll still say exactly where she is. She wants the benefit. She wants the pleasure. She wants the growth. She wants the newness. She wants the change. And even though she knows that, she still won't do it because she's just comfortable where she is. And I mean, who wants to be uncomfortable, as she was saying? And so it really hit home to me that that's most people's situation. And as you say, the ha-ha moment, it's like, okay, it's not that people are stupid. It's not that people are lazy. It's not that people are stuck even. You know, they even know what they want, even if it's not clear or crystal clear. They have a vague idea of where they want to go, what they want to do, what they want to have. And it's not so much building up something. It's usually removing the limitation, removing the barrier. And so realizing that actually what was holding her back was not that she could do this, but she basically believed, she had a self-limiting belief that she wouldn't be able to find better, basically, that where she was, as bad as it is, she knows how to deal with that pain. And so the idea that most people go around trying to make change is a two-step process. It's obviously knowing what you want and where you need to get to and making the change and putting out the effort. But you've got to figure out what's blocking you. You've got to figure out what's stopping you. And I'll give you another example just briefly, because I just worked with a client this morning, funny enough, and he's trying to build up his confidence, which is normal. And he's doing all the normal predictable things, and it's all working partially, but not fully. And so on the front end, you can push to be more confident. You can just, you know, make yourself do it. The challenge is there's a reason why he's not being confident, which is an unconscious fear of rejection or criticism. And so it's actually mathematically easier and quicker to remove the limitation, the block that he has, than it is to pump him up with confidence. Because if you remove the limiting or governor in front of him, he would automatically, by default, be more confident. So it's kind of working backwards. Most people work backwards. They kind of get themselves to do things they don't want to do. Bit like we were talking much earlier about the exercise. They try and do things they think they should do, but they just keep pushing, doing something they don't enjoy or can't work at, and eventually break and crack. And if it's a weight loss, they go around in a yo-yo. And if it's, you know, trying to build up confidence, they just give up because they can't crack it. So it's about removing the block more than it is just literally dealing with the push. So for this lady, we had to literally work on, okay, what's preventing you? It's your own belief itself, actually, not the real reality. And then once we released her from that limiting belief, she automatically progressed in her life. She and her husband divorced, and she eventually kept in touch, and she met a guy and very happy. So, you know, understanding that what prevents you is usually a block. And that block, if you can remove it or work on at least attempting to gain the momentum to remove it, you stand a better mathematical chance than just trying to push, which is going to probably be a bit futile.
How far do you go back in their past? Because I have a different opinion on what's being thrown around out there in regards what differentiates a therapist and a coach, which is therapists analyze their clients' past as a tool for understanding present behaviors, and coaches identify and describe current problematical behaviors so the clients can work on the issues themselves, right? Well, that's what they say. And I don't agree with that fully, because how many times was it necessary for me to dissect my coachee's past experiences to get to the root of the problem of them not being able to move forward? So what is your take on that, Darren?
It's a good question. I like it. My take on it would be the following, just to give a brief overview to the listeners, just to differentiate a coach from a traditional therapist. A traditional therapist is mostly, not necessarily wholly, but mostly interested in the past, as in the why something happened. So for example, again, using the analogy, if you've got low confidence, they'd be more interested in finding a trigger point in past tense time of an event that happened in your life and what basically happened. And they'd want to dissect it and analyze it, because the logic would be if you could do that, you could crack it. And so the present would change and so would your future, which makes sense. Now, a coach's ethos is they work on the opposite end of a spectrum. They're not so much interested in the past or the why. They're interested in the future and the what. Big difference. So again, same analogy. If the person's got an issue with their confidence, the client would come to the coach and say, look, I want to be more confident. Well, the confidence is just saying, okay, well, you obviously telling me the future. You want to be more confident. This is a future tense outcome. Fine. Then I know what you want and where you want it. It's in the future and to have more confidence. Let's just coach you to do it. So we come from different kind of places. Neither one is right. I really believe that. I don't think a coach is right and a therapist is wrong any more than the other way around. I think different people find value in different things. And I think one of the advantages of a coach is the speed process, because obviously if you go back in time and dissect and analyze and have to keep recurring memories, that can take much time, unfortunately, as we know from traditional therapy, you know, it can take years, not always, but sometimes. But in coaching, it's literally, okay, what do you want? Click the finger, let's make it happen. Do this, don't do that. And usually it's a much quicker process. Now, if there is an underlying reoccurring pattern where as a coach you make a change in the future, or the present tense I should say, for the future, and you find it doesn't last, it is because there is obviously another layer to it that hasn't been addressed, that probably turns up a little in the past. And yes, it needs to be addressed, not so you can go back and you relive the past and just feel the pain, but just literally go back there almost in a disassociated way, just so you can analyze and figure out what happened there. What went wrong? What did I miss? What did I need? What did I need to learn? And just find that nugget. And then you can just bring that back into the present and tally it up with the coaching you're doing. And again, it kind of works. Now, again, if it doesn't work, sure, you go back again. There might be another layer. But I think that's the value. Now, for me personally, I kind of intermix both. I do go back where it's prevalent or relevant. But usually I stick with, okay, what do you want to have happen? What's the change? What's the shift? And here's what we need to do. And just using weight loss as an example, you know, it's irrelevant to me if Mary or Tom have, quote, failed 27 times or 207 times or for the last 10 months or 2 weeks or 12 years. It's not that it's irrelevant completely. It's just not the relevant information. I just need to know who they are today, where they are, where they're going, what they want, what they believe is holding them back, and dealing with it. And usually 90 to 95% of the time it works. And where those that 5 or 10% is a challenge, then okay, we delve a little deeper, we go backwards, and we do try to find out what the underlying or underpinning reason is. And I just throw another example, because I do financial coaching, and a lot of time people will come and they'll tell me they've got problems with their partner in their home life. They're having arguments with their lover or their spouse or their friend. And again, cut a long story short, we delve, we talk, we discuss, and we find actually it's nothing to do with the partner. It's financial problems, financial stress, financial lack that causes person A to feel stressed, who then communicates to person B in a stressful way, which initiates or helps to create problems. So again, it's underlying causes to what we perceive to be the problem that sometimes, yeah, you have to go back and you do need to address and you need to pull that out. For me personally, I think 9 times out of 10, I don't do that. And I keep that tool in my toolkit, in my bag, and I just bring it out where necessary.
I see it this way. In hiring a good coach, you're actually hiring 3-in-1, a coach, a consultant, and a therapist. But if you think, oh no, I'm only a coach and I do nothing else, then I can bet with you, you're losing out on a lot of money. Let me explain. Let's take a relationship coach as an example. If the coach sees themselves as 3-in-1, then they will coach their client by looking into the past as a therapist, but at the same time, also look into the future as a coach. And by advising as a consultant in going to the gym, getting that needed haircut or maybe even pedicure, and what clothes to wear in order to make a great impression on the first date. So if we pivot between the three, we'll get our clients a faster transformation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. Right? Exactly. Yeah.
Darren, what is the one common myth about being a coach that you want to debunk?
That's easy. That we're some kind of superhuman. It's really not like that at all. I'm speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for you, Mameni, or other coaches who may be listening. But for me, definitely, you know, I'm a human. I'm a normal human. My speciality is coaching. My passion is helping people. And my expertise is in the context of weight loss. And when I put all that together, then I'm the happiest person there can be. But, you know, I make mistakes. I make errors. I don't, you know, always say or do the right thing. And I, you know, as a coach, I occasionally get comments where people say, well, you're a coach. You should know this or you should do this. And I have to lovingly remind them that, yeah, you're absolutely right. I have no argument with you, but do bear in mind, I am still human. So, you know, I think that relationship with your client is important to have them understand you are transparent. You know, you are see-through. You are, this is what you see. This is what you get. You know, I'm not some fictitious superhuman that's impregnable with bullets. It's just not like that. And I think if you can relate that, that would really help your clientele base. And for me, that's a debunking that's really important to get out there.
Nodding here the whole time you were talking, you totally nailed it, man. I mean, who came up with the idea that we're supposed to be flawless anyway? Now, I need to say, if I don't have the answer and I know I actually should, then all I can do is excuse myself for not knowing. And at the same time, I will tell them I'll find out and get back to them. But if it's a human mistake and I'm being held accountable because I'm a coach and I get a reaction, something like, that shouldn't have happened to you, Oliver, then it signals that someone has slipped through the cracks during the strategy call that I should have not taken on as a client. Because that's an attitude that does not go down well with me. And as you just said, as if we are some kind of superhuman. Which leads back to the good old saying, nothing and no one is perfect, right? Darren, do you see it as a requirement being certified as a coach? Or do you think people can start their coaching business and get certified later on?
The latter, absolutely. So personally, I do not have what they class as an academic certification or qualification as a life coach by choice. Now, when I was a personal trainer back in the 90s, mid-90s, for example, the personal training industry was not regulated here in the UK, at least, which means anyone could say they were a personal trainer. Anyone, literally. Okay. Right. And then the personal training industry became regulated, I think 2002, 2003, or 2004. I can't quite remember. Now, the life coach is probably going to take the same progression. It's currently, here in the UK at least, an unregulated industry. So again, what that means is, literally, loose language, it means anyone can say, I'm a coach and go out and be a coach. There's no regulatory process to control that currently. I'm sure it's going to change in years to come,
sure,
but that's how it is right now. So 20 years ago when I started, you know, it's the same as it is now. It was an unregulated industry. So for me, the way I've looked at it is I hit a certain point. I hit a critical mass, a certain threshold. I'm not going to lie because I can't think off the top of my head, but I think it was about 2010, might have been more, 2011, but something happened back then. And I realized I had a choice. I could go and build up my career by getting a qualification. And I had that as an opportunity. And then I also thought, well, okay, do I need to? And I had to measure the word need, not just my opinion, but I had to measure it. So I looked at my current status as a coach and I realized, thankfully and fortunately, by good fortune, I had business and I had repeat business and I had recurring clients and I was doing pretty damn well. Just to give you an ethos of the what I'm talking about here. I mean, I had my first million and a half in property by 2008, if I'm not mistaken. So I had done really well by measure, not just by opinion. So I had to figure, okay, if I'm going to go out and get a qualification, it's got to serve a purpose. Otherwise, you know, I'm doing something I can't justify. And I couldn't justify needing to do it because I was producing results, which then comes back to my second point I want to make, which is, I think in the coaching industry, you know, by measure outside the financial parameter, it's, you've got to deliver results. And if you can deliver results, then I'm not saying you don't need a qualification, because your question is obviously talking to me and about my personal preference, just my opinion. I'm not talking on behalf of anyone else, because I know other people who have a different perspective, and that's fine. But for me, you know, looking at it backwards, looking at it from a client's point of view, not me or you or anyone else, but the client, I, you know, out of 100% of the clients I've seen over 20 years, which is, you can imagine, tens of thousands, I think three have ever asked me what qualification I have, which to me is indicative of the fact that they just don't give two rats. You know, they're interested in producing the result they want healthily, happily, safely, securely, but they're interested in the result. They're not interested in where you went to school or what qualification you had. At least me, again, I should pertain that to myself. They're not interested in just the academicness, because I also know probably three people I'm thinking off the top of my head who have academic qualifications as coaches, more than one, I should say, but they have less business than me. And again, I'm just reflecting that by measure, not by opinion or ego. It's just by measure, because why then do I have the clientele? Well, I must be producing results, which, you know, correlates with my income. So basically, as long as you do a good job and you can deliver the results, who am I to tell you you can't be a coach? And, you know, whether you're a teacher or a parent or any kind of situation, we all coach everyone else. We may use a different word for that. I can understand you won't use the word coach, but we all coach someone else, whether you're a kid or a father or a son or a teacher, or you go to work and you help someone do something. In terms of our profession, because obviously we earn a living from it, but it's our profession, so it's our professional status, so that's our professionalness, we earn money. But yeah, for me, I never got to the point where I decided I needed a qualification simply because I was producing results. And so I've never gone out and got one or needed one, I believe. But I think the option is there for people to make that choice. I've always said my education, my qualification is a real life experience. On this podcast, we don't have time to talk about my whole life. But you know, I've had a lot of experiences, a ton of them, and they've always, you know, been limiting, unfortunately, and they've always pulled me back, and I've been pulled down, but I've managed to get up and pull myself forward. So what I give to people is not some classroom teaching. And I'm not downplaying that. I'm just saying, for me, that wouldn't float my boat. For me, it has to come from, like, this podcast is off the cusp. You know, I'm talking here literally without a script. It's literally just coming out of me real. So it's, the coaching has to come from your heart. It can't come from your head and be effective. At least that's what I believe.
You know, I see far too many people that want to get into coaching, but their mind is programmed by the old model, that they can't get into something if they're not certified. I can't tell you how many people ask me on a monthly basis if they need to be certified, or they say something like, how can I call myself a coach if I'm not certified? And I always answer, how can you call yourself a coach if you've never coached? Because no certification is going to give you the experience to move people forward. Am I saying not to get certified? No. But don't hinder yourself thinking you can't start because you don't have a piece of paper hanging on the wall. Sometimes I think those people that give a certification such an importance are those that are lacking the belief that they have what it takes to be a coach, meaning they don't have the certainty in themselves that they can guide their clients to reach the transformation they so desire. With that said, let me make it very clear. What a certification does is it gives you structure in your coaching, but it won't make you a coach just because you decided to get certified. You need to have skin in the game, i.e. experience, to get your client to where they want to be.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great way of saying it. I couldn't agree more. It's and I know a lot of people who are in that position, as mentioned, who have gone out cold, shall we say, just as a metaphor, and got a qualification, which is great. But then they don't know what to do with it. They can't deliver. They have the academic intellect to do it, but they have little or less personality to go and deliver it. And so it's like having the best computer, but you can't plug it in. it's not going to be much use to you. So I think what's even more important than just academic knowledge is the ability to deliver, to healthily, happily, safely deliver what people search for. And I'm only talking about my experience here because that's just my experience. I'm not talking on behalf of anyone else because they may have different views. But in 20 years, bottom line is I haven't gone out and got a qualification. And I've been able to produce some pretty phenomenal results because I do believe in myself. I like to think humbly, not arrogantly, but I do believe. And by measure, I've helped a lot of people. And it just continues to fuel the idea that, yeah, I am a coach and I can help people and make a difference in their life humbly and get them to feel fulfilled, which is what we all deserve, rather than going around feeling beaten up. And like you say, Mimeni, even the coach themselves who can't get themselves to feel like they're even a coach, you know, that's a mindset and that's a block they have. So, you know, everyone's out there to be saved, you and I included. And, you know, as coaches, it's a great job to go out and be able to help them.
One thing is for sure, no certification is going to get anybody magically new clients. Did you know 87% of coaches or consultants from around the globe go out of business in their first year? And the main reason why they go out of business is because they didn't figure out how to generate a steady stream of new clients. Therefore, my team and I have created a workshop that outlines exactly what we do to generate a consistent stream of new clients month in, month out for our business and for our clients. So if you're a coach or consultant and you're committed to changing more lives with your expertise, then I encourage you to register for the free masterclass. Just imagine to never wonder where your next clients are going to come from next month. And all you need to do to make that a reality is head over to clientsindroves.com. That's clientsindroves.com and register for the free training. Darren, are you ready for the
Thunder Round?
I'm ready.
All right. If you could go back in time and meet the 20-year-old Darren, what advice would you give yourself?
I would tell him to start coaching early on at age 25.
What is the one thing most people don't know about you?
I actually coach VIP now, have done for about 10 years. So when I work in the VIP environment, I get paid. When I'm working in the public arena, I still have the money come in, but it goes to a charity, not to me.
I need to dig deeper on that one. What does VIP mean?
Very important people.
Yeah, sure. But what kind?
Royalty, musicians, TV stars, music stars, politicians, artists, high net worth people, anyone that has a powerful status in society. And by measure, they have a powerful influence on society because their decisions or their influence is going to have a large impact.
If you could meet one person you have not met yet, what would you ask them or what would you want to know from them?
Ooh, that would be Shakespeare. And I want to know where he got all of his knowledge on the various words. I think he used 25,000 separate words in his workings, which is unequal to this day. So I'd like to ask him that question.
What is the best advice you have ever received?
I think it comes back to the quote we talked about earlier, which is when you're green, you grow. And if the moment you start to ripen, you're going to start to rot. So never hit the plateau where you switch off and get comfortable. Always look for growth in your life.
Now, before I ask you about your favorite book, tell us about your book with the title Only for the Serious Permanent Weight Loss.
Okay, so this book is a book obviously on weight loss, but with a difference, which is, you know, I just want to set the scene. I think everyone is saturated and sick to the bone of weight loss, and me included. Okay, and the reason is it doesn't work usually. Now, there are people that go out there and succeed. It really does have its success element. But for the majority of the people, majority of the time, it just doesn't work, which is traditionally 95% of people, 95% of the time. It's a very, very high disbalanced statistic. And traditional weight loss is based on you lose weight and that's it. And what usually happens is people get stuck into just putting the weight back on for whatever reason. Then there's hundreds and thousands of different reasons and triggers and causes, but we don't have time for that. But the point is, people we know put the weight back on, and you may know yourself if you're a listener. You go around in a typical yo-yo weight loss pattern. So what I wanted to do, I didn't want to write a typical weight loss book. By any measure, I wanted to do something radical, something completely different. And so I wanted to write a book that would help people do exactly what they actually wanted anyway, which is to lose weight permanently, which may sound like a simple, subtle distinction, but it's everything. Because if you go out to lose weight, literally once, and you keep your weight off forever, then I think that's the holy grail of the weight loss industry that everyone's looking for. And so the book is basically based on this preset, which is the weight loss as a whole is a two-step process. Step one, lose weight. Step two, manage / maintain the weight loss. And what people usually do is step one, over and over and over, and they never progress to step two. So they lose weight, put it back on, lose weight, put it back on. They just keep running step one, and they never get to hit step two, which is maintaining the weight. Because obviously, if you maintain the result, you'll never need again to lose weight, which again may sound like an oversimplification, but that's really what's going on in terms of math, in terms of psychology. So the whole book is a program. And what I mean by that is it's not just a book on diet or nutrition or training or anything. It's literally a program that has a structure. So you're supposed to, it's 12 chapters, and you read one chapter at a time, and then you implement the strategies and the tools and the suggestions that you're given in each chapter over the next 3 days or 4 days. So you can really solidify them into your life, and you can make them more habitual versus just effort, effort, effort. And you do that, and basically over 12 chapters, that's going to take you about 6 weeks. And you know what's interesting, actually, Mamani, you were talking earlier about people that listen to podcasts and don't quite finish them at some point. And it's true. And I think in the book industry, it blew me off my chair, actually, because it said that 10% of people read past the first chapter, which is astonishing, because people spend all that money, want that desire, want that result, go out there, buy the book, and then just don't read past the first chapter. So I try to make the book more than just a standard book, because I knew that, you know, unless I did that, I wouldn't get more than that 10% going past the first chapter. So I've put some surprises in the book in terms of how I've written it. It's more like a story. It's more like a journey. The book is written very personally. So when you're reading it, it's as if I'm talking to you, as if you can hear my voice now. It's not just text and content and print. It's actually a journey that you take. But the whole premise is literally how to literally lose the weight quickly and healthily, and then B, keep it, literally, so that you don't have to change your style of life too much, which is your lifestyle. You don't have to diet. There's no dieting. There's no doing exercise you hate, which is what we started talking about earlier on, about how to find an activity you love to do genuinely so that it never feels like you have to exercise. I mean, can you imagine what it would be like if you were addicted to exercise? I mean, you can just only imagine how your body would shape. Obviously, it would change. And obviously, achieving a weight loss goal would actually be a lot easier, a lot, lot easier. So no dieting, only exercise you love to do, no change to your lifestyle, and basically an education as well as a journey, as well as holding your hand and going through the whole book over 6 weeks is really leading to producing changes that last through time. Because again, just to close here, I mean, to reiterate, I think everyone is sick of dieting and weight loss, because in long term, it doesn't work. And I just want to make the point, it does work short term. If you're going to a party, if you're going to the beach, or you're going on holiday, and for a few days, you just want to look thinner and be better, then actually dieting works. There's no argument there. It's absolute fact. It works. The challenge is what most people do is they take the same approach, which is eat nothing and maybe do exercise they hate, and try and make that as a template for months and months and years of their life, which is why it can't work, doesn't work, and they can't sustain the result. So teaching them how to have a different mindset and thus take different actions with their food and training means that they can lose the weight permanently, which is why the book's called Only for the Serious Permanent Weight Loss. And again, one last thing, the title Only for the Serious is a filter. It's basically communicating that, look, if you're interested or just curious, then this is probably not for you, this book. And I will say that now to the viewers, the listeners, because this book is based on someone who is really desperate to lose weight, maybe struggling, maybe in a position where they've tried everything and they're pulling their hair out and they're just at the end of the tether, as they say. They're in that painful place again I was talking about earlier. They're motivated out of pain or pleasure, but there is a motive. And so Only for the Serious will mean that these people will be able to commit, and therefore they'll get the permanent weight loss. It goes hand in hand.
Very interesting. I presume we can get it in Amazon, Google Books, and where else?
Yes, you can get it all across Amazon, Google Books, and Lulu.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Has it been translated in any other languages?
Not yet. Plans to do so, but yes. Looking to do it.
Oh, definitely. I mean, your approach is so fresh and unique, it needs to be translated at least into one more language. I would say Espanol.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if we had the time, I'd probably talk for hours because I'm a rambler. I really can. But what the book's about, it's about a passion. It's about helping people with pain, because obviously being overweight has nothing, or very little, I should say, to do with the physical body. If you've got an overweight body or lumps, or you don't like your shape or whatever it may be, however you look at it and word it, it's more about the pain upstairs, the stress, the frustration,
yes,
the disappointment, the sadness, the despair, the disillusionment. I hope not to paint a depressing picture here, but you know, people have pain. It's an emotional situation. Losing weight is a means to an end. It's not the end, because a lot of people lose weight only to feel as bad as they did before when they were, quote, overweight. True. Because people are looking to lose weight. People don't want to have 7 pounds less weight on their body for no reason. Mm-hmm. They want to lose 7 pounds so they can feel different. Losing weight is all about basically changing how you feel. Not Pollyanna, where you just feel different in the moment and nothing changes, but realness, where you can literally get a shift in your body correlating with a shift in how you feel, and you can get the control back in your life. So that's what the book's based on. It's coming from all the different angles.
So tell us, what is your favorite book and why?
I would have to say my favorite all-time book is a book by an author called Viktor Frankl, and it's called Man's Search for Meaning. And it's based on his unfortunate experience during the Second World War in a Nazi concentration camp and the atrocities that he had to go through, him and his family. And he was a psychiatrist of Jewish heritage. And he had an epiphany. He knew he was going to die, or he believed he was. And obviously he saw people around him dying. And, you know, it was his profession to be in the psychological business. So he was looking around. He was just, you know, doing his curious thinking. And he kind of thought about, you know, I want to find out how people are making decisions here. What's going on? Some people are going to die. Some people are going to live. What's the difference? How do we define that difference? What's going to set the scene? And again, cut a long story short, he basically did due diligence and he observed, and he was fortunate enough not to, you know, have his life taken away. And he was there for some time and he found out what he later went on to write many books. And this is one of them. And what he discovered was a profound thing, which was, in essence, basically meaning is everything. So the people, using the example of the camp, people in the camp who basically were going to die were the ones that basically gave up. I don't mean anything derogatory, but I'm just saying those that thought that this is an overwhelming situation and we're just going to die gave up. They literally succumbed to the circumstances because the meaning for them was that, you know, they were going to die, basically. The ones that lived, he discovered by interviewing, were the ones that changed the meaning of the experience from I'm suffering for no reason to I'm suffering for a reason. And the reason is, if I'm going through all this pain, and I live and I survive, then I can come back to the future and I can tell everyone what happened here. And my ability to touch that future, my ability to know that there is a future, my ability to have some kind of pleasure, not pleasure, haha, pleasure, but some kind of release or relief, allows me to convert the meaning of my suffering. In other words, rather than suffering for no reason, which is true suffering, I'm actually enduring the suffering now so that I can come and have less pain in the future and potentially help people and help the world and help society. So he discovered that meaning is everything. The meaning of being thin, the meaning of losing weight, the meaning of smoking, the meaning of being confident, the meaning of being happy, the meaning of any and everything will determine how you feel and thus how you behave, the actions and effects you create, and obviously where you end up in your life. So that was really one of my most favorite books, the most profound books I think I've ever read in my life.
Then let's wrap up this podcast with a last question, and then we'll say goodbye. Who do you specifically work with, and who should contact you if they want to work with you? Basically, who is your ideal client, Darren?
Okay, I would surmise that my ideal client is basically someone who's very much in pain. And I don't mean that again in a derogatory way, but I mean, everyone says, you know, I want to quit smoking. I want to be thinner. I want to earn more money. I want to be emotionally more confident. I want to emotionally be more happy, et cetera. Everyone wants to change something. Okay, great. But I usually find that, you know, my greatest pleasure and the greatest effect come hand in hand, which is when people are really in pain. I don't mean just interested or curious or they want to, or they should, or they think they ought to. You know, there's a different level of emotionalness here, or emotional consequence. So the kind of people who are really, really stuck, like I say, if they've tried every diet, and I mean everything, and they're they're not just not losing weight, but they're feeling depressed and it's starting to affect the quality of their whole life. These are the kind of clients that I can help the most, who I enjoy working with the most, and I can deliver the most value. Or if it's another context such as confidence or emotional happiness or fulfillment or a career change, whatever it is, again, as long as there's a situation where the person feels they've gone to maybe other coaches, maybe, or other therapists, or tried to do this or tried for years, or it's never worked, and they're literally in a painful place. I'm not sure how I'm wording it correctly for the listeners, but if you're in that place where you're stuck, I mean, literally stuck, and you just don't know where to turn, you're putting your hair out, then you're my kind of ideal client. Someone who's basically in a position where you don't know where to go and you've exhausted all possibilities, that's where I usually have my greatest value.
So if you want to connect with Darren, just head over to DarrenChristopherRoland.com or visit CoachesSpotlight.com and type Darren in the search bar and you'll find the show notes to this episode and all the links that lead to Darren. Now, we've invited Darren to come back on the show in about 2 weeks or so, where he's going to hold a mini masterclass and talk about how to lose weight and keep it off permanently. So if you're interested to learn about this topic, you definitely want to subscribe so you'll get a notification when that show goes live. With that said, thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Darren, it was a real pleasure having you on the show, and I'm looking forward in talking with you soon.
Likewise, Mamani, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I want to thank you personally for allowing me to come on and share my ideas and my ethos with your listeners. And I think it's a great show. And again, I hope to have another situation with you in the future.
Thank you for tuning in to the Coaches Spotlight podcast. If you like the show, then please make sure to rate us, leave a review, and subscribe. We appreciate your support. See you next time.